Okay, evening everybody. Welcome to the meeting of the Audit Committee on the Thursday, the 8th of Feb 2024. We've obviously got Councillors Sankey, Peters and Hudson on the screen. Can you hear me okay, Councillors? Yeah, great. Good. Yeah, loud and clear. Yeah, good.
Thank you.
Good to see you all.
Can I also thank you for organising the group? I was expecting the weather to be worse than what it turned out to be. Thank you very much indeed.
No worries. Thanks to Dan for that. Thank you, Dan. Okay, item one. Apologies for absence. Obviously, we're at full strength. Five in the room are on Zoom, so okay for that. Any declarations of interest from councillors? No on the screen, no in the room. Thank you. Item three, urgent business under Rule 12. I'm not aware of any urgent business. That's the case. Thank you, Dan. Questions? Item four, questions from the public. We've not received any questions from members of the public. Item five, questions from members of the committee. Again, we've not received any questions from members of the committee. Item six, minutes of the previous meeting, which was 29th of November 2023. Everybody seen the minutes? Any comments on those? No? Okay, I propose the approval of the minutes from the previous meeting. Can I have a seconder from the room? Thank you, Councillor Hadley. We'll now go to the vote. All those in favour? That's a good point. Yeah, is that a no, Dan? Yeah, no, unfortunately. Yes, in spirit. Appreciate the moral support. Thank you, Councillor Sankey. Was that unanimous in the room? Sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. That's passed. So, item seven, internal audit update. So, hand over to Ruby to take us through the report. And Tracy, of course.
I'll start with the progress report. So the report that you have in front of you in the papers is an update of all the work that we've undertaken since the last meeting. There's a number of audits that we've completed the field work, and the reports are now issued, and we're going through the process of discussing our findings and agreeing management responses. So hopefully those should be finalised in time to bring at least some of those, if not all, to the next meeting. In terms of the action tracking, you can see within the body of the report we've got on page 4 a snapshot of where we were at that point in time with the report. So we've got 61% of all of the actions that we do that were implemented at that point in time. So that is moving in the right direction. I think we've had lower percentages in previous meetings. So pleased to say that the action's been taken to get the actions implemented. There aren't any high-risk actions, there are outstanding. They are all medium and low actions, and we're working with all the action owners and council officers to progress them further. So again, in the appendix to the report, you can see the detail of the summary there of the types of actions that are underway at the moment. And on page 6, on appendix A, you can see a snapshot of where we are against the progress of the plan. So, as I mentioned, there's quite a few, there's about half a dozen of those audits that are coming through as draft reports, so hopefully we'll have that updated ready for the next meeting. So I'll pause there at that point in case there's any comments or questions from anyone.
Thank you, Tracy. Colleagues, Councillor Sankey. I'll ask colleagues, would you prefer to do one at a time or in block? Answer question. Yeah, one at a time. We'll go one at a time, Councillor Sankey. Yeah.
Thank you.
Over to yourself, thank you.
It's because the number of, and the dates of the overdue actions are changing all the time. So if we're 5 months along, there's more actions that become overdue. So that position is changing all the time.
Yeah, but would you expect over the year, if you look at it as a 5 month period, would you expect then if you had a 10 month period, would you expect the numbers of actions to be more or less? I
as in overdue or as in implemented?
Thank you. I think it's a really good point that you're raising in terms of overdue actions. I think from my perspective, and starting with the authority in January, I've had this conversation with our internal auditors. What you would expect is no overdue actions. So if people have given a deadline for implementing an action, you would expect them to hit that deadline. If there is a reason that they can't, you would expect them to liaise with the internal auditors and ask for a revision to the deadline and set out the reason for that. So normally we would be aiming for no overdue actions. In practice, that doesn't actually happen. So I think the good point to note here is, as you've set out yourself, we've gone from 47% of the actions being implemented to 61% of them being implemented. So the percentage that have been implemented by the time frame has increased. But and the other good thing to note within that is, there are no high risk actions that are outstanding. But I suppose what audit committee might want to consider is there any further action they want to take to try and support internal audit colleagues with encouraging appropriate or relevant officers to implement those actions. So what I've seen at other audit committees is, if there are, I know they're mainly medium level actions now, but if there are outstanding actions relating to an audit where there's a number of medium actions outstanding past the due date, they ask for an update from that officer to the next audit committee. So it encourages them to come along and give you an update on why they've not been able to implement those actions. And as I said, start with the medium level ones and then work down from there to get the message out and encourage that implementation.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to pick out the leisure centre contract. I know it's low risk in terms of we've got an agreed contract, but it was 2022, wasn't it? It feels like a loose end that we could do with tying up. So I think that's an example, Councillor Sankey, one that I'd perhaps like to bring. Yeah, that's fine for me, Councillor Sankey. Can I suggest that me and Lloyd take that forward for the next meeting?
I'm happy to ask and approve Dan as well to arrange for the Chief Officer who's responsible for those two internal audits to come and give an update on actions they're taking and if there is a delay, what the reason is for that. So you've got that assurance.
Thank you very much indeed. And my next point is around, I don't know whether you want to speak, it's part of that package of item 7, the risk management policy. Risk management policy, medium risk. I just wondered why we set an October 24 deadline for that one.
Sorry, Councillor Stankey, just in terms of that, could we cover that when internal audit colleagues provide an overview of that item? It's the second part of the... I think it's just the second part, the focus on the performance first and then the head of internal audit opinion.
Yes, we'll go on the performance one, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Stankey. Anybody else with questions on that part of the item? Sorry, Councillor Peters.
was just going to build on the point that Councillor Sankey made, but I think you answered it, Chair. From my experience, when you're talking about programme delay, you automatically default to risk. What is the reason for the delay? And is that doing anything to the risk profile? So I assume we'll pick that up if you suggested, Chair, in a moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll put up in the second part of the item.
Okay.
In that case, I'll hand back to Ruby and Tracy for the second part. That's okay.
Thank you, Chair. So our second paper is our the outcome of our stage one head of internal audit opinion work. As we progress, we will be bringing stage two outcomes on for future meetings. In terms of our stage one work, we've looked at the arrangements in place with strategic risk management. And there are three actions within the body of the memo that have been discussed and agreed. They're medium risk. One's around the risk appetite and ensuring that is put in place. And then we've got one around the risk register format and also around the content of the risk register. So I'll pause there really in terms of the actions are there, we're tracking them through. In terms of the date, there was a comment around the date for the policy. That was in order to ensure that these actions could be incorporated into the next review of the policy, because the policy had only just been reviewed and come through audit committee in September. So the next due review is the October, and that's why we've got that date agreed there.
Chair, if I can just, in terms of the point that Tracy's just raised, and again, just responding to the question about that being a medium level risk. So it doesn't change our approach to actually managing the risks that have been identified. What the action is seeking to do really is clarify in the Council's risk management policy what our risk appetite is. So the level of risk at which we seek to take action to bring that risk overall down. But in the meantime, whilst we're updating the policy to formally identify that, we are obviously still taking actions to manage the risks in the meantime.
I just have another question. If we can then the board is admitted, I've got a question on the business side. Think about
that. No problem. Can I just check anyone else in the room as well? Any questions?
I have a question on, I don't know if it's the right one or not, on the risk assessment strategy. Can't find, so I'm hoping you'll point me to it, whereby we take into account the effects of failure and the widespread effects. Like when you chuck a brick into a pond, you get the ripples, you get the waves coming out, affecting other areas until it reaches the bank. In that sense, we assess the risk of the failure, but do we carry on forward in time to quantify the effects of that failure? I can't seem to find any sort of description of that or quantification of that.
Thanks, Mick. Lloyd?
So our risk management policy, there are, in terms of the templates that Trace referred to earlier within that, there are a number of items that we set out. So the first one is obviously the risk itself. The next column is the impact of that risk, the effect. So what impact will that risk have if it happens? So that covers some of the items that you've just referred to in terms of if the risk occurs, it will lead to a failure. What's the effect of that failure? So there's a financial impact, or there's an impact on the council's reputation, or there's a legal impact. So we do cover the impact of that risk occurring. And then that leads to what are the actions we need to take to manage that risk and bring the risk level down overall. So it is in the templates that we use.
If I give you an example then of where my mind takes me, if we go back to the point in time where there was a quantification of risk applied to the town fund initiatives, right, where we were going to approve the movement of the library into the market hall at a cost of £7.2 million, that didn't happen. What I'm interested in is the sort of resources and the finances and the concerns that sort of failure arises, reveals itself, and how we deal with it, because I would have thought that failure in that sense draws in resources that otherwise would have been applied to current workloads, work banks and whatever, individuals working on another project that have to be drawn away from that to reconcile this new piece of news. I can't find that assessment.
Thank you. Lloyd, and then we'll go over to Councillor Sankey on the screen.
I don't think we would necessarily quantify in relation to, I suppose, wasted officer time for a specific project. So within our strategic risk register, we have got a risk around.
Well, I'm thinking of financial resources as well, not just the human.
Yeah, so we have got a risk around the delivery of the Thames Fund. So if we don't deliver that, what is the impact, both in terms of the local economy and financial position of the authority? And we have got a risk around capacity of officers within the council as well. But yeah, I suppose the risk that you're talking about in terms of we've allocated officer time or money to an output which hasn't then happened, we don't necessarily quantify that because we wouldn't necessarily start in a project with the outcome of you know, anticipating that we would fail that project. What we would do if a project hasn't happened, we'd normally do, if it's a material one, we'd do a lessons learned exercise to say what went wrong, what could we learn from that and do differently next time.
Of course, yeah. And I still don't think that we'd pursue those sufficiently. I mean, I do know that there was some degree of consternation about the failure of that initiative, and there was some degree of worry that there might be clawback of the amount of money gifted by the central government. To the extent that that worry made us reposition that 7.2 million into another project, effectively, that was not included in the town fund initial 7.5 projects or whatever it was. To the extent that some S106 monies, 4.5 million or whatever, were hastily moved into position to support what was then a developing Project D, Mark II, which was originally only the linkages from the high street. This is before you were sort of in place, so I might be talking too much detail. The value of that was 3 odd million to break through from the high street into the area that fronts the Trent. All of a sudden, Project D Mark II came along, which then encompassed the high street development or regeneration, which was a project different from the town fund. So the disturbance of the failure of that original initiative started to affect other projects like S106, where money was dragged in from all sorts of places, and the repositioning of that 7.2 million into that regeneration project, which obviously grew out of all proportion to what it was originally intended. I can't see, other than you know, a few words on paper and what have you, where the risk analysis was done to account for the fact that there needed to be this redistribution, refocus elsewhere. And it worries me that if we don't learn the lessons from, and you know, I've been a critic of the town board for ever since its inception, and the fact that they didn't read their brief properly, or didn't command their brief properly, so we ended up.
Can we just keep this on the risk?
Yeah, I'm keeping this on the table. What I'm asking for is, if we're learning lessons, then we have to be honest with ourselves, and if there is this, I understand the human nature of wanting to provide a adequate answer to a general question and what have you, but internally, we should be looking at these issues and saying, where is the weakness in that? And I don't think that has been done.
I think just coming back to the remit of the panel, I think the remit of the panel is around assurance that there are the risk management processes and framework of the council is adequate and the associated control environment is adequate. I think the question you're asking is perhaps around how does the executive make decisions and are those decisions fully informed, which probably isn't a question that this panel would be raising and answering. If the question is specifically, was there a lessons learned exercise undertaken after that decision was made, I think that's something as a councillor you'd be able to ask the executive to respond on, but it doesn't necessarily directly link to how we manage risks and what control environment we've got in the council as a whole that this committee would be looking at.
Yeah, that's inviting me to ask the monkey instead of the organ grinder.
Thank you, Councillor Quigley. Thank you, Lloyd. Councillor Sankey.
Thank you, Chair. My question actually is very close to Councillor Hugging, but from a slightly different angle. I was looking at the reference to the town board and raising that the risks are too generic. And the text is, we also noted that the risk consequence strategy risk 2, risk of delivering a stronger towns fund, was too generic and more detail was required as to how the towns fund may not be delivered. I'm concerned about the risk being too generic and not there, because one of, as a separate issue, and actually I'm following the section 151 officer advice by asking the executive how the issues around the town's board, and if things slip, how do we make sure that we don't lose money, right? And how are we dealing with our risk management, risk strategy? And I was just concerned that this implies that we haven't actually got the granularity of the risks for the town board. Is that correct?
Thank you. It's a really good question, Councillor Sankey. I think the answer to that is, as part of the review of the risk management policy in year, we made some slight amendments to the templates that we use for identifying and managing risk. So when we brought the quarter one update to Cabinet of strategic risks, it was in the old format. Quarter two, which this audit has looked at, is in the new format, and between moving from the old format to the new, there's been a couple of issues in terms of mapping the correct text over to the relevant risks. So internal audit have spotted that in terms of the audit that they've undertaken. We've made sure we've corrected that for the update of the quarter three strategic risks, which are due to be reported to Cabinet next month. So it wasn't that we weren't identifying the risks correctly and the associated impact. They were there in the backing documents. It's just unfortunate that it's been copied over into the new format in the wrong way, and some of the actions were against the risk that they didn't relate to.
Our risk strategy is not generic, and as such, it is actually specific, and it's just a concern administrative error.
Yes, which has now been corrected for quarter three.
I do apologise, Chair, for picking those things up. But yeah, anyway, so I hope that explains it. Thank you very much.
That was a good spot. Thank you for the explanation.
No other questions.
Thank you, Councillor Sankey. That's a good spot, and thank you. That's a really helpful explanation, Mark. Any more questions on internal audit? No? Great. Well, thank you very much for being here, Tracy. Much appreciated. Excellent. So, move on to item 8, which is a beefy one. Our external audit update for 21-22 and 22-23 to include the annual audit, auditor's annual report for 22-23. Obviously, 21-22, we're all collectively banging our head up against the wall about the lack of accounts from EY and the Staffordshire Pension Fund. There's so much detail that you're presenting tonight. I wonder if I could ask if you could advise the committee as much as you can about where the blockage is between the pension fund and the EY, what we're waiting to be actioned, who needs to action it, and what's stopping that from being actioned. I appreciate there are some things that you perhaps detail that you don't have, but as much detail as you give us on that, I think the committee would appreciate.
Yes. Shall I start with that and then go through the...
That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. So...
I would start by saying that we are doing everything that we can to encourage EY to provide us with the information that we need. They need to complete their audit work, and they need to go through their internal review process, and then they need to write back to us as auditors of East Aperture to provide the results of their work. We would then need to review those results of the work, see if there's any implications for our audit findings before we can conclude on our audit. We're in regular contact with EY. We contact them every 2 weeks to get an update, and our latest information is that they'll be able to provide their responses by the 23rd of February, which I think is 2 weeks tomorrow. We've escalated it in EY at the partner level. Our senior partner has spoken to their senior partner to explain that the issues that this is causing for us, not just East Aperture, but other Aperture bodies as well. And we've also escalated it to PSAA to let them know that this is happening, and it's obviously a big problem for us. Apart from doing that, we really can't do anything more other than just try and be patient, and hopefully they will be able to provide the information in the next couple of weeks. But there is a chance that they may not, given that there has been a number of deadlines that have passed.
And,
We've been here before. Chair, sorry, if I might just add to that. So I think Sarah said this isn't something that's just affecting East Staffordshire Council. So I attended a meeting of the Section 151 officers across Staffordshire the week before last. So obviously this is impacting all district councils and the county council themselves as well, all awaiting for those assurances from the pension fund so our accounts collectively can all move forward. So it isn't just affecting East Staffordshire. I think the other thing to note as well, hot off the press this afternoon, which I've sent on to the chair, is the DLUHC, Department for Housing, Levelling Up and Communities, this afternoon have opened a consultation in terms of options to move forward and tackle the backlog of local audits. So they are proposing a number of backstops for closing accounts dating back to 2016-17 across some parts of the country, and looking at ways to finalise those by the end of September this year, so we can then move on and not get into this position for future years. So that consultation has started today. It's open for 4 weeks until the 7th of March. I've shared the details, as I said, with the Chair. I'm sure, Chair, you'd want to share that with other members of the committee following the meeting.
Yeah. Would you like to pause there for any questions on the 21-22 accounts? Yeah, okay. Any questions from in the room? In that case, on over to Councillor Sankey. Are you on mute, Councillor Sankey?
Get the information on the 23rd, and assuming we get what we expect, how long before we will sign off the accounts? And are we going to do the process of delegating this to the chair to sign it off so we can get it done as quickly as possible, out of the way, to be blunt?
Thank you, Councillor Sankey. I think in terms of that, it's something that Sarah and I had discussed prior to the meeting. So I think to give the panel some assurance, you can see from the audit findings report that there are no significant or material findings in relation to the accounts for 21-22, or indeed, I'm jumping ahead and stealing Sarah's thunder here, or indeed in terms of the preliminary findings for 22-23. So that was going to be our recommendation. So we could put this to bed once we've got those assurances from the pension fund. We were going to ask for delegation to the chair if the committee were happy with that.
Yeah, okay, lovely. Great, thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Sankey. Any more questions on that point? Okay, in that case, I'm back to you, Sarah. Okay.
Thank you. So our first paper, there's three main papers that we're presenting tonight, is our auditor's annual report for 22-23. This is the output of our value for money work that we've done over the last year. It's quite a lengthy document, but I will just focus on the key points that I think you should be aware of, given the length of the document. So on page 3 is our executive summary, and I would say that looking at that, it's an overall very positive report. There are three new recommendations, but they are only at the improvement recommendation level. They're not key or significant recommendations. So those are the type of recommendations which we would recommend as best practice, really. So nothing significant or concerning there. It also summarises that two prior year recommendations are still in progress. One has been superseded and one has been completed. So we had four recommendations last year. This year there are three. And overall, the direction of travel is very stable, so we don't have any concerns about any of the three aspects of value for money, which are financial sustainability, governance, and economy efficiency and effectiveness. I'll pause there unless there's any questions.
Yeah, thank you, Sarah. Any questions? On recommendations, I was going to ask, as we move over from GT to assets, would you pick up the recommendations that are put forward in 22-23 and then you would monitor those moving forwards? Sorry to bring you in, it's not your item.
Yes, we would. So we would consider outputs of prior audits and either arrange a meeting with Grant Thornton or review their prior audit file, including value for money, and consider that.
Thank you. Any more questions? Okay, great.
Okay. So paper number two is our audit findings for 21-22. We did previously table some findings in November 2022. That's quite a long time ago. This is an update which just reflects the progress that we've made since that point. So page three has the headlines. I think the key thing to note is that our work is basically complete apart from the pensions issue that we've already talked about with EY. We also have some final procedures to do once those assurances are received from EY, and we plan to issue an unmodified audit opinion when the time comes. The other areas where there's been quite a lot of change since our previous version of this report, if you go to page 10, it talks about the valuation of land and buildings. And if you cast your minds back, then you might remember that we had a lot of issues with the PPE valuations. We had difficulties with the valuer, and we worked with management to get new valuations in place, and those have been reflected now in the statements. There's quite a lot of detail there about all the work that we did, but the outcome of all that was an upwards adjustment in the value of the PPE by £32 million. Going back over prior year and 21-22. So that was the outcome of all of that work, but we're now satisfied that those are correctly stated in the financial statements. There's some information on page 11 about the pension liability. Again, just to note that we're waiting for EY before we can complete our work. And without that, we don't have the assurances we need about the information that the pension fund provides to the actuary, so the actuary can prepare their estimates of the liabilities. The last page where we have some changes is zooming on quite a lot to page 35, where we talk about the audit fee. It may not be page 35 after all, that's what I've written down, but it's the Appendix C. And that's our fees page. So you'll see there's a proposed fee, which we set out in our plan early in 2022, and then there's the final fee. So there's a few additional fee variations that we had agreed with Lisa prior to her leaving the council, just to reflect the additional work that we've had to do with the pensions and the PPE valuations last year. So those are the key things to bring to your attention, and I'll pause for any questions.
Thank you, Sarah. Questions from anybody in the room on screen? No? Thank you.
Right, the final report is our audit findings for 22-23, which is still preliminary because we haven't finished all of the work that we need to do, but that's summarised on the headlines on page 3. I should mention that since this was written, we have made some progress in some of these areas, so there is less outstanding than it would appear on here, thanks to Lloyd and James and the rest of the team. Again, we anticipate an unmodified opinion, subject to the completion of those works. There aren't really many findings from the audit to report back to you, but page 29, which I think is Annex B, is our action plan, which summarises some control recommendations that we've raised this year. None of those are high significant effect recommendations. They're all medium or low best practice and good practice. They're not things that we think are impacting on the financial statements, but we want to bring those to your attention, and we've got management's responses there as well for your information. And then again on to the audit fees on the following couple of pages, or no, page 32. Again, we've proposed, we had our proposed fee in the audit plan that we brought to you last year. The final fee that we're proposing is including an additional fee variation just to reflect the additional time spent on the audit, which has gone on a bit longer than we'd probably all like, but hopefully nearing the close. So yeah, those are the key points that I wanted to flag, but happy to answer any more questions that might.
Great, thank you, Sarah. Any questions on 2023? I think that's a no from the screen and a no in the room. Okay, well, thank you for all your hard work in sticking up the 21-22 accounts. Much appreciated. And they're two really good reports from the council's perspective, really positive findings for the council. So thank you for that. Okay, great. Move on to item 9, which is another external audit update for 23-24 this time. So welcome. I'm sorry, is it Azets or Azets? I always forget. Is it Azets? Azets, great. Laura from Azets to... Sorry, Bethany. Bethany from Azets to provide an update on 23-24.
Thank you, Chair. Before I get into the report, I just thought it would be useful to firstly introduce myself. So I'm Bethany Hinks. I'm the director in the external audit team at Azets, working as in capacity as the audit manager for East Staffordshire Borough Council for March 24 year end, and Laura Hinsley, who is the key audit partner for the engagement. My background is very much specific to public sector and working with district councils, borough councils and also NHS organisations. So prior to being at Azets, I was working at Grant Thornton in their public sector audit team as well. You'll probably be aware that Azets is a new entrant to the local government external audit market, along with Bishop Fleming, as a result of the PSAA tender contract process. So we have significantly grown our team over the past 12 months with our public sector specialists based in Edinburgh, Birmingham and London. But in terms of Azets, we are a top 10 audit firm. We have over 3,000 employees in the UK and are very much ready for taking on the audit for East Staffordshire Borough Council. So I will get into the audit plan. I'm happy to take any questions either about Azets or the plan at the end of the report. So I'll talk you through the external audit plan that you should have in front of you. This is a plan which sets out audit strategy for the year ending 31st of March 2024, highlighting any risks that we've identified as part of our audit planning and risk assessment procedures for both the audit of the financial statements and also the value for money work as well. I just wanted to point out we've had really good engagement from the council at this point, so myself and the audit partner Laura have met with various members of the finance team. We've met with Lisa before her departure in October, as well as meeting with Lloyd, Councillor Mansfield and also Andy O'Brien as well. Pages 3 to 5 set out our general scope and approach, so I won't go into those in detail, but I did want to highlight on page 6 our planning materiality to you. So we use materiality as a basis to focus on specific financial balances within the financial statements. We are required to determine this at planning. We have determined this based on the unaudited draft financial statements for 22-23, and more details of this are set out in Appendix 1. But the figure I just wanted to bring to your attention is our what we would call our trivial threshold, which is the £64,000 on page 6, which is the figure that we will report to management and those charged with governance any unadjusted or adjusted misstatements above that point. We will reassess materiality on receipt of the draft financial statements for 23-24 when we receive them. I'll now talk through the risks that we've identified, which are on page 9 onwards. it's important to note that we haven't actually identified any additional risks that are new for the council this year. So I will talk through them one by one and go through those. The first one being management override of control. So auditing standards require us to consider this as a risk in all organisations, just given management's unique position that they could, if they wanted to, manipulate the financial statements through overriding controls within the internal control environment. So that is a risk that is prevalent in all organisations. The next risk on page 10, again, auditing standards require us to consider the risk of fraud in revenue recognition for all entities. As the or a public sector organisation, we also consider the opposite side of this risk, which would sit within fraudulent recognition of expenditure. So we consider both risks side by side. We do consider that this risk can be rebutted on the basis that we consider there to be little incentive by management to recognise revenue or expenditure fraudulently, and also there is limited opportunity to do so given segregation of duties within the team. Page 11 sets out our third risk in this document, which is the valuation of lands and buildings and investment property. Given the highly material value that sits on the council's balance sheet, we have identified this as a significant risk given the assumptions and judgments that are used in determining this valuation. We have also highlighted it as a key accounting estimate, which is effectively just an area of additional focus for us within our audit. Page 12 sets out the final significant risk that we've identified at planning, which is the valuation of the defined benefit pension fund liability. Again, a highly material figure within the financial statements, which has seen quite significant swings in recent years. Again, key judgments, assumptions and estimation uncertainty is prevalent here. So again, an area of key focus for us throughout our audit. Moving on to page 14 and 15, this sets out our value for money work and planning that we've undertaken to date so far. At the time of completing this report, we hadn't seen any reports by the predecessor auditors, Grant Thornton. So as Councillor Mansfield mentioned, we will consider that as part of our ongoing work in this area. But as at planning, we haven't identified any areas of significant risk with regards to the council's arrangements to secure value for money within the three areas that we're required to look at, which is financial sustainability, governance and improving the three E's. Page 16 just sets out our audit team as well as our proposed timetable for the 2024 audit, and page 17 confirms to you our independence to enable us to act as external auditor. We have noted an additional piece of work in relation to the housing benefit grant claim that we will be undertaking, but we have concluded, although we have identified potential threats to our independence, we're satisfied appropriate safeguards are in place for us to complete that work and remain independent. Page 18 sets out our audit fees, and page 19 is, as I mentioned previously, our calculations to support our materiality assessment. And that takes us to the end of the report, but I'm happy to take any questions, should there be any.
Great. Thank you, Bethany. So I'm bare with numbers and names, which is probably why I'm on this committee. Thank you. It's really clear and comprehensive. Thank you for that. Any questions from colleagues? Councillor Sankey? Thank you, Councillor Sankey. Can I just take that first and I'll come to you, Mick? Is that okay? Yeah. Is that something that's worth the three of us discussing, maybe, to see if that is something that should be included in the audit plan?
Yeah, planning is an iterative process, so yeah. We're happy, obviously, to consider things as things progress. It probably will come under our value for money work, more likely, yeah. Given it's around slippage and timetable, but I don't know, Lloyd, if you've got...
Yeah, exactly what I was going to say. So I think in terms of the risk of material misstatement to our statement of accounts, I think... That would probably be covered. So, as Councillor Sankey quite rightly said, it's a large capital scheme. So, part of the audit testing in terms of expenditure that we're including in our accounts will include samples. So, some of those large value items I would have thought would be included in some of the samples to make sure we've accounted for that spend correctly. But that really is the limit of the potential material impact on the account, making sure we've accounted for the transactions correctly. I think in terms of the risk to the authority of the townsman failing, then as Bethany quite rightly said, that's probably tested under the value for money assessment rather than the testing of the materiality within the statement of accounts.
Thank you. That makes sense. Yeah, thank you. Councillor
Cummings.
Thank you
very much.
Possibly before your time, Lloyd. Is that something we can follow up after the meeting, perhaps?
Yeah, certainly. So I'm assuming that would have gone through the Value for Money Scrutiny Committee or a relevant EDR at the time, but it's something we can follow up if Dan can capture it as an action.
Yeah, I agree with the Council. Yeah. This is the biggest project that we've got, and it's fraught with opportunities. Putting a negative on it. And it's mentioned several times in the various audits that we do and independent people do as well, so it is a significant situation. We have to make sure that it is, you know, the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed all the way through.
Okay, thank you. Dan, is that okay if we can start looking into Councillor Huckabee's request and then we can take it for a five money from there? Yeah, thank you, Dan. Councillor Slater, do you want to come in?
Yeah.
So, in essence, we joined the national procurement exercise for our external auditors, which is run by the PSAA. So, they invited authorities to join that process, which we did. So, there was a report to audit committee, I think it was last year, the year before, to enter into that process. They then award the outcome of that to individual audit firms. So, the outcome of that is through the PSAA process. It's not that we have chosen our new auditors. They've done that for us in terms of achieving best value. They will also take into account the fact that it is good practice to change audit firms intermittently as well. So that independence from our external auditors remains in place and they don't build up too close a relationship with officers or members working at the council.
That's going to be thanks, Lloyd. Okay, great. If that's everyone's questions, though. Oh, sorry, Tom. Councillor Hadley.
Thank you, Chair. It's just some. I've got two questions, really. I have. This is on page 2, under the statements. We have therefore identified valuation of land and buildings, surplus assets, investment properties as a significant risk. Now, so with all these three grouped together, is a significant risk. Would they be the same risk, like identified as that all individually be significant risks? But do you see what I mean?
I think so, yeah. So we've grouped it as one risk in terms of the valuation of lands and buildings and investment property, given they all effectively sit within the balance sheet on the same line or across two lines. But effectively, the risk is still the same across both, and we will work with the finance team in terms of the external valuation that you will get across both of those as well.
And I take it there's no excuse me. I take it there's no way of reducing the risk of valuation of land and buildings because of how much significant land we and buildings we own and hold.
Yeah, given the highly material value, it's just such a significant area that it doesn't take a lot to be wrong for it to have a significant or material impact in the financial statement. So it would always be a significant risk.
Thank you. That's all. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. No problem. Thank you, Councillor Hadley. Thank you, Bethany. If that's all the questions.
Chair.
Sorry, Councillor Hudson.
Yes, it's not a
Yeah, thank you, Councillor Hudson. Lloyd?
Sorry, but thank you for that, Councillor. I think some context around that. So the PSAA procurement exercise that I referred to a couple of minutes ago, that has seen a significant increase in external audit fees across the country. So it's not something that's unique to East Staffordshire. It's something that's come out of that nationwide exercise. And I think if we think back to the conversation we had earlier around delays to local government audits, I think the previous round of PSAA procurement 5 years before that, perhaps there wasn't the fees that were achieved through that that procurement process probably weren't sufficient for the work that was involved. So since those contracts were let, there's been additional requirements in terms of tests that our external auditors need to undertake as part of the audit process, which has meant that whilst our baseline audit fees previously were lower, we've seen additional fees each year for additional work that they've undertaken as part of the audit. So whilst the outcome of the new tender process has seen an increase, I think it represents the increased complexity in the sector and also making sure that the sector is sustainable to undertake those external audits and we don't continuously have the delays in outcomes for external audit processes that we've seen in the last few years.
Thank you both. Any more questions? I'll take an extra close look. I've tried to close this three times and failed. But I think that's definitely it this time. Thank you, Bethany. Thank you very much. Okay, final substantive item on the agenda is item 10, Treasury Management Strategy. So it's your first meeting, I forgot to say, isn't it? Our new Chief Financial SY1 Officer, Lloyd, will provide an update to the committee on that.
Thank you, Chair. So the report obviously presents the Council's updated Treasury Management Strategy for 24-25 and obviously also includes the normal supporting minimum revenue provision policy and the annual investment strategy. The strategy itself contains details of the role of the Treasury Management function within the Council, the risk management processes that we put in place specifically in relation to Treasury Management, capital plans and prudential indicators relating to them, the minimum revenue provision policy, so how we set aside funding to repay debt, the Council's current Treasury position and indicators relating to that, and then there is a statement from our Treasury advisers around prospect for interest rates and economic position for the country as a whole. And at the end of the strategy, we've also got our processes for managing borrowing and investments, including creditworthiness of our counterparties. So in summary, there have been no proposed changes to the existing Treasury Management Strategy, either the framework or the controls, so there's nothing different in this strategy to the one that we've brought to Audit Committee previously. And there are no proposed changes to the minimum revenue provision either. Hopefully it's also helpful for members to note that whilst I am now the 151 officer for the Council, I have only started at the authority recently, so last month, and I've had the opportunity before bringing the Treasury Management Strategy to committee to review it in detail. I've not identified any practices whilst I've undertaken that review or any controls which I would consider unusual for an authority such as East Staffordshire, so hopefully that gives you more assurance as well from me joining the authority and having the opportunity to review in detail before bringing it to you.
Thank you very much, Lloyd. I'm going to check we're taking a vote on this, aren't we? It's being recommended to go to full council. Yeah, thank you. Any questions?
I have a general one, but I don't know whether it fits nicely into your report when it comes in the appendix that are attached to that. Investments, 65.
Lloyd?
I think it's a very good question that you've set out, Councillor. I think I'll make a statement first and then answer your question about training, I think. So in terms of the level of investments that we've got, you're quite right that that does generate investment returns, which we can use to support the Council's budget and provision of services in East Staffordshire. And you're also quite right that where we have borrowing, there is an interest rate associated with that, so we have to make a payment for that borrowing. I think what the Treasury Management Strategy just set out, though, is whilst we set a borrowing limit, that borrowing limit is driven by our capital plans. So we are planning to spend £47.3 million in our capital programme. Some of that is funded from government grants. Some of it is funded from borrowing. Where we plan to fund capital expenditure through borrowing, we increase the indicator that's known as our capital financing requirements. So that basically assumes we borrow money to fund that capital investment, and we pay that money off over a period of years, which relates to the life of the assets that we're creating, because they'll be in place for more than 1 year. What you'll note from the report, though, is whilst that metric calculates what our borrowing requirement should be, we don't necessarily go out and borrow that money. So as well as investing our surplus cash in banks and financial institutions to return money to us to help provision of services, we will make a decision at the point of needing to borrow whether or not we should actually borrow or whether we should use our cash instead. So if the interest on borrowing is 4% and investing money with a building society, a bank, a financial institution, we're only going to get a 2% return, it would be better value for money for us not to take out the borrowing. And we lose that cash that's available for investment, but we're only losing 2% on interest rather than paying 4% on interest. So we do take that judgment as well. So what we do, and you'll see in the treasury management strategies, that achieves an underborrowed position. So whilst we've calculated the capital financing requirement, which is what we could be the maximum we could borrow to fund our capital programme, we don't always borrow that money. We're underborrowed. We're using our cash rather than taking out borrowing to maximise that return for local people in terms of assets versus investments we get on our investments with financial institutions. So hopefully that gives you a bit of context, really, in terms of the decisions that we make in terms of looking at whether we do borrow money or not and whether that does offer value for money. I think the more complex part of the question is there somewhere easy for you to have that overview of how treasury management for a local authority works? There isn't somewhere that's easy to access and neat and nice and easy to follow, but what I've done at other authorities, our treasury advisors, who are Link Asset Services, they are able to come along as that independent advisor to the council and provide training to members of audit committee around treasury management and how that works in local government contexts. At previous authorities, that's something we've focused on, audit committee and wider as well, because the fee they propose for that training doesn't matter how many members are involved, whether it's 3 members or 36 members, it's the same fee. So it's something that we could look to put in place, if something that the panel would like for audit committee, but we could also, through the chair, if he's supported, extend that to other members as well in terms of the remit that the whole of council has got when the audit, the treasury management strategy goes into full council for approval as well.
I was going to make that point about training. So 4.12, it says that we get training in respect to treasury management as part of a rolling programme. I think that rolling programme something was to pick back up. There was an initial flurry of training when the committee first came to post this time last year, well, May last year, which I think we need to come back to. Lord and I have been talking about having a work plan for the committee, which is again something I think we've lacked so far for this committee. I think it makes sense if we designed the training and the work plan alongside each other, so that if we've got stuff on the work plan that needs training, people are ready to do that part of the work plan. So thank you. Councillor Stankey.
If I might, I think it's in line with the overview I gave in response to the previous question that we assume in our indicators there's a need to borrow. Whether we actually go out and borrow or not will be determined by the interest rates that are available to us. So in the situation where we've got £64 million worth of cash investments and we need to borrow £3.5 million to fund our capital programme, it's more than likely that if interest rates remain high on borrowing, we wouldn't actually enter into that borrowing. We'd just run down our cash by £3.5 million to get better value for money.
That's what I thought of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gavin.
I can't vote for it. I fully support this one. So thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Sankey. Any more questions from the screener in the room? Okay. So we're going to a vote. So, I propose that we accept the recommendation and take this forward to full council. Anyone to second in the room? Councillor Slater? All those in favour? That's unanimous in the room. Thank you, Lloyd. Great, actually, the date of the next meeting. Just before I give that, just for members' information, Dan made me aware that moving forward, there'll be a standing item on the agenda for EDRs, if relevant, any executive decision records. I believe that's done in all other scrutinies, so it's just to bring us in line with the other scrutiny committees. So if there's any EDRs that are relevant, we'll discuss them at future meetings as a standard item on the agenda.
And the date of the next meeting is 14th of March 2024. I guess one thing to flag is that if we do have sign-off accounts, then we usually do statements of accounts as a separate meeting. So it might be something that we discuss close to the time, whether we need to do that for next meeting. Thank you to colleagues on the screen. See you all next week, full council next week, the week after.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bye. That's everybody in the room.